The top state health official in Orlando is put on leave after encouraging his staff to get the COVID vaccine.
He sent an email telling his staff it was irresponsible of them not to be vaccinated.
Plus, the housing crisis is now spreading across the state.
This is the Florida Roundup from WLRN Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. The state health department put its lead administrator in Orange County on leave this week because he encouraged his staff to get the COVID jab. Then later, the skyrocketing cost of homes and rents in Florida. Why advocates are pushing state officials to declare a housing emergency.
You can join our conversation statewide. Phone lines open now, 305-995-1800.
Support for the Florida Roundup comes from Naples, Marco Island, and the Everglades, home to white sand beaches, warm Gulf waters, elegant accommodations, fine dining, and more. For an unforgettable vacation, only paradise will do. Florida's Paradise Coast.
Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week and supporting public broadcasting in your community. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, the state of Florida ordered Orlando's top health official to stay home this week. The reason? He encouraged his employees to get vaccinated. Dr. Raul Pino is the top health department administrator in Orange County. Now, earlier this month, he sent an email out to his staff after finding out how many of them had received any dose of a COVID vaccine. It turns out that out of more than 500 workers in the Orange County Health Department, only one in seven had been fully vaccinated, including a booster shot.
Now, the state says he was placed on leave as it investigates whether any laws were broken. Back in November, remember that a new state law was passed and signed by Governor Ron DeSantis that bans employers from mandating workers be vaccinated, including government workers. Now, we'll hear more about this from the mayor of Orange County in a moment. And we also want to hear from you as well. So line up the phone calls now, 305-995-1800. Do you live or work in and around Orlando? What do you make of this story? What about your local public health department and its actions and words during this pandemic? 305-995-1800 or on Twitter at Florida Roundup.
First, though, let's go to Danielle Prieur. She's been covering the story for WMFE in Orlando. Hi, Danielle. Hey, Danielle, are you with us?
I'm with you. Can you hear me okay?
Can hear you great.
Great.
So, Danielle, what did Dr. Pino's email to the staff at the Orange County Health Department say?
Yeah, you know, he didn't really force anybody, and I want to make that really clear. He just sort of, you know, like a parent would say that I'm so disappointed in you. Basically, that's what he did in this email. So he just said, you know, as the decision to get vaccinated, he said, I've had a hard time understanding how we can be in public health and not practice it. The reasons can be many, but so many of us, I'm sorry, but at this point, in the absence of reasonable and real reasons, it's irresponsible not to be vaccinated. And then he went on to say, we've been at this for 2 years. We were the first to give vaccines to the masses, and we're not even at 50%, which he called pathetic.
Let's keep in mind, too, the Supreme Court struck down the Biden mandate on workplace vaccinations, but said that healthcare workers, that it's a different kettle of fish for healthcare workers.
That's right.
That those mandates can stand for healthcare workers. So the state says it's investigating if any Florida laws were broken.
Yeah.
Did Dr. Pino break a law?
Well, I'm not a lawyer, that's for sure. But I can tell you, like I said, he didn't force anybody. He only strongly encouraged people to get vaccinated and boosted. But in their response to me, they did say that they are, quote, conducting an inquiry to determine if any laws were broken. The department is committed to upholding all laws, including the ban on vaccine mandates for government employees, and will take appropriate action once additional information is known. Of course, referring to Governor DeSantis's ban on vaccine mandates here in the state.
How has Dr. Pino led during this pandemic in terms of being the image of public health in Central Florida?
I think that he's been calm and collected and really helped make sure we get tests and vaccines out very quickly, and especially to underrepresented minority communities. I know that Dr. Pino often talks about, you know, being a proud Cuban American and really making sure that COVID tests and vaccines were getting out to the Latino community here, which we have a very large community in Orange County. So I think him not being here is really missing a crucial piece of our response strategy and plan. I know a lot of people have said they're very concerned. I spoke with a pediatrician earlier in the week, Dr. Candace Jones, who works in Orlando, who said, you know, she's not sure what the message is that, you know, people are going to receive from this. Are people going to stop getting vaccines now, or are they going to be even more confused than they were already about, you know, the efficacy and safety of vaccines and boosters? So it's really concerning considering the fact that cases are still very much surging here.
Lots of Omicron in Orange County, yeah. In other words. So yes. So then how are people in Orlando reacting to this news? And let's be clear. There has been quite a bit of outrage beyond mm-hmm. Orlando to finding out that a health department official was placed on administrative leave simply because he was doing what he thought was right, encouraging his staff, not ordering them, but encouraging them to get vaccinated.
You know, I think the response has been one of anger here in this area. I mean, when we posted our story, we had the most hits we've ever had on our website. It was shared so many times on Facebook and Twitter and Reddit because people are outraged. I mean, as you said, this story has been reported by the BBC now, the Washington Post. It was on the Colbert Report. So it's been everywhere lately. And I think, you know, Carlos Guillermo Smith, our local representative, said it best, this is political. So I think that, you know, it's politics that we're seeing at play, but at what cost to the public health of our local community, I think, is the question that should be, you know, really be asked right now, especially, like I said, when he was so crucial in reaching underrepresented minority communities in this area.
Representative Smith will actually be joining the show later in the hour. But in the meantime, thank you, Danielle.
Absolutely.
Danielle Prier, reporter with WMFE in Orlando, on the story.
Some of your phone calls coming up in just a few moments, 305-995-1800. Let us know your thoughts as well on Twitter, at Florida Roundup. The mayor of Orange County, Mayor Jared Dimmons, joins us now. Your Honor, welcome to the program. Thanks for your time today.
Let me just begin by saying good afternoon to all of you. I'm honored to be with you today.
Well, before we talk about the Department of Health controversy, let's talk about your health, if you would be so kind to share with us. You did release that you tested positive for COVID this week. How are you feeling?
Thank goodness I'm feeling great with no real symptoms at this point. I was fortunate, tested positive the first part of the week, and I am triple vaccinated. I had the Moderna vaccine and had the booster. Going back to August, and even the first part of this week, I went through the monoclonal antibody therapy. And so I'm feeling really good. I'm just quarantining now, consistent with the CDC guidelines.
Yeah. What's your prognosis ahead? What do your doctors tell you that you feel comfortable sharing with us?
Well, I'm minimally impacted, so I would like to be back to work next week. And so I've continued to work from home this week because, again, I'm not sick, so I don't have symptoms that would not allow me to do most of my work. So I've been working virtually, having virtual meetings for hours upon hours each day, and doing what I normally would do with leading Orange County government during these times that we're living through at this point.
I suspect some of those meetings and communications have had to deal with the situation with the State Department of Health in Orange County with Dr. Pino. Have you had any communications with the state regarding the status of Dr. Pino?
The state health office did not contact my office regarding the administrative relief of duty of Dr. Pino at all. The way it works here in Florida, unlike many states, the local health officers at the county level are actually state employees appointed by the Surgeon General. Mm-hmm. However, they typically go through a confirmation by the Board of County Commissions. So during the many months now that we have been dealing with the pandemic, I have worked very closely with Dr. Pino as I have made various decisions about vaccine mandates and facial covering mandates, as well as other types of decisions that I've had to make as the mayor of the entire county. We're somewhat unique here in Orange in that here within the state of Florida, in most cases, you don't have a strong countywide elected mayor.
Right.
Miami-Dade, Orlando, and Jacksonville have those. And so I get to work with the health officers.
So what do you make of the point of Dr. Pino's email that he sent to his staff earlier this month? He wrote that it is, quote, irresponsible not to be vaccinated, end quote, as health department employees.
Dr. Pino is a professional health officer. And I will tell you that he puts the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens first. And he is really apolitical. The decisions that he has worked with me on making in our community have not been ones based on politics, but ones based on what we need to do to take care of our community. So he served as an advisor to me during this nearly 2 years that we have been dealing with COVID. Here within Florida. Mm-hmm. And so I trust him. I trusted his opinion because he provided an unadulterated opinion based on his training, knowledge, and experience. And it's really kind of a shame what has happened with Dr. Pino here in this regard. I knew that once the governor here in Florida changed the Surgeon General, it would send a ripple effect throughout the state of Florida. Because ultimately, Dr. Pino reports up from the county health department to the state surgeon general appointed by the governor.
Right.
And we all know across America that this particular surgeon general and governor has approached the pandemic differently than perhaps I would have approached this. And sometimes we've been at odds over time about how to contain the virus. But we were forward-leaning here within this county, and because of the some of the advice and the partnership with the local hospitals, other health care providers, and with the various local governments, the state and the federal at various times, mm-hmm. we've done yeoman's work to contain the virus. And so here recently, I have said this before that I really wish Dr. Pino well. I hope that he is able to return back to work sooner than later. But I, quite frankly, I don't know.
Mayor
I
Demings,
don't know that.
Pardon the interruption there. We're just a little bit short on time. But I want to ask you about one of the explanations that the state has given for putting Dr. Pino on administrative leave. It has talked about a vaccine status of a Floridian is a private matter. And today, Governor Ron DeSantis was asked during a press conference, again, if he has received a vaccine booster. He did not answer either yes or no, but instead he called it a private matter. Do you think that someone's vaccine status is a private matter?
In many regards, it is a private matter. However, when you are a public official, especially an elected official that makes decisions, I think it is germane to the public in terms of total transparency that one, that if you're an elected official, especially in the position of governor, that is something that the public deserves to know about.
In his email, Dr. Pino mentioned that the Department of Health in Orange County had to cancel prenatal appointments in a clinic because of a lack of staff. Do you know if that was because employees testing positive for COVID or perhaps for some other reason?
I have no way of knowing precisely what happened there. Now, I will tell you, I have many conversations with Dr. Pino and have had many conversations with him over time. And since I've talked to him since he's been in this alternative status at this point, but that is not something that he has shared with me.
Okay. Your Honor, thank you for joining us. Mayor Jerry Demings, the mayor of Orange County here on the Florida Roundup. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great rest of the week.
Now let's bring in Dr. Jeff Goldhagen of UF Health College of Medicine, chief of the Division of Community and Societal Pediatrics. Dr. Goldhagen, good to have you on the show. Now, Dr. Jeff, you're the former director of the Duval County Health Department in Jax. So what's your reaction as a physician and a public health professional to the sidelining of Dr. Pino?
Well, this is a critical issue that the state and citizens really need to be cognizant of. It's a violation of the fundamental principles of public health. It's a violation of the expectations of the community. Dr. Pino is a physician. He takes an oath to always do what's in the best interest of his patients. So he was doing nothing more than ensuring that his oath was maintained. And this is a reflection of what's happening in the state and what's happening in various counties, and that is the dismantling of public health. And with the position now of the Surgeon General being anti-vaccine and anti-masking and anti-basic public health precautions, it's a critical issue, and it is without question a reflection that in fact politics has trumped, so to speak, public health. And is putting
now you've been vocal for a while that you believe public health in Florida is being dismantled, and you see this as the latest example of kneecapping public health. Dr. Pino, in his email to his staff, said, "I have a hard time understanding how we can be in public health and not practice it." How can the state respond in a meaningful way to public health issues if doctors aren't allowed to live out, I guess, their Hippocratic oath, trying to take care of people, make sure they're healthy?
Well, they cannot. They absolutely cannot. And this is a reflection of what this governor wants to do, which is politicize public health. And in the process of doing that, he's dismantled it. In Duval County, as an example, our budget now is about a third of what it was a decade ago. There's the expertise that has existed across the state in public health has been dismantled. And many, if not most, of the public health departments have been muffled. The voice of the directors has been muffled. Now, I'm in an interesting situation because I was actually fired by Jeb Bush for taking a position in 2005. That was different from his position as it relates to Medicaid and Medicaid expansion. And no, these are
this
very
was when
serious
you
times.
Were this was when you were the Duval County public or the health director in Duval. Go ahead.
Right. So this is has been an evolution over the past 15 years or so of the executive branch usurping what the roles and responsibilities of the counties are with respect to public health and dismantling it. And as a result, any expectation that a citizen in the state of Florida had that the state has their best interests related to their health and well-being is just not true. And I've said before, and I'll say it once more, that in fact, the deaths of thousands of Floridians can be traced to the policies that have been implemented related to COVID policies.
Stick around past the break, Dr. Goldhagen, but quickly before we take a short break, how are physicians reacting to this news, finding out that a fellow physician was put on leave for encouraging his employees to vaccinate?
Well, they are irate and devastated. And the reaction from physicians now have been somewhat dulled because it's been two years of policies that have been implemented in this state that have handcuffed them for doing what they know is best for the community. From the beginning of the pandemic, the physicians have been really silenced with respect to their voice as to how to manage the pandemic. And in particular, physicians who are serving the minority community and physicians in the minority community.
Let me just say, one way to have your voice heard is to call us right now. Hold that thought, Dr. Goldhagen. We're going to take your calls on this after the break. 305-995-1800. Up next here on the Florida Roundup.
Support for the Florida Roundup comes from Naples, Marco Island, and the Everglades, home to white sand beaches, warm Gulf waters, elegant accommodations, fine dining, and more. For an unforgettable vacation, only paradise will do. Florida's Paradise Coast.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup, and thanks for listening this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And in Miami, I'm Tom Hudson. Your phone calls in a matter of moments, 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800, or at Florida Roundup on Twitter. We're talking about the State Department of Health putting the leader of Orange County, State Department of Health, Dr. Raul Pino, on administrative leave after he sent an email to his staff imploring them to be fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Deborah sends us this note on Twitter. The Orange County Health Director has done a great job leading the county during the pandemic. Suspending him for writing a letter advocating healthcare workers get vaccinated. State leaders are ridiculous, Deborah tweets. Terry says the situation with the public health official seems unfair to him as well as to the health of us throughout Florida. He said exactly what he should be saying. To ban mandates is one thing, but this smacks of banning freedom of speech. John tweets, what's the difference between Governor DeSantis recommending that people get vaccinated back when vaccines were first available? Well, let's put that question to our guest here on the Florida Roundup, who himself was a county health official back more than a decade ago. Dr. Jeff Goldhagen is with us, UF Health of Jacksonville, the chief there. Dr. Goldhagen, how about that? Any difference between what Dr. Pino was suggesting in his email versus what Governor DeSantis was saying a year ago?
Well, there's no difference on the surface, but there is a fundamental difference, and that is that Dr. Pino is a physician in his role as public health director. It is absolutely his responsibility to be out there pushing what is in the best interests of the community that depends on him and for whom he has a responsibility. And so he was doing nothing more than fulfilling his responsibility to do what is in the best interests of the community that depends on him and who he serves. Ultimately, he serves the community. He may, from a managerial standpoint, right, report up to the Secretary of Health. But ultimately, his role and responsibility is to do what's in the best interest of the community. And that was what he was doing.
305-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup. What do you think, folks? Sherrod in Plantation, Florida. Hey, Sherrod, thanks for holding. Go ahead with your thoughts.
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm a physician in the Tamarack area with 27 years of experience in managing geriatric patients. I was very proud of the way we started this whole process under Jared Moskowitz. We started with vaccinating our elderly rather aggressively with a great deal of resources. However, since then, this whole thing seems to have gone in the wrong direction. First, the appointment of our Surgeon General, who clearly believes in things that modern medicine doesn't accept as real, and then followed up by getting away from how you stop a pandemic, which is by vaccination, by isolation, by use of masks. Now, I believe that our governor is quite bright, so the only thing I can think is this is a political move on his part, which he hopes to gather folks that are against vaccinations, against mandates, et cetera, to him for purposes of gaining support for future runs for the presidency. My question is, what do my fellow Republicans, I'm no longer a Republican, I left the party over this issue, but middle-of-the-road people, people who just want the best for the community, think of this kind of behavior? I think it's completely unacceptable. As a physician, I lost 7 patients to this disease process. In the early days when the vaccines weren't available, it causes death and destruction. What kind of behavior is this to be accepted? And then a perfectly able, conscious, smart physician turns out and asks his employees, are you vaccinated? And then he has to stay home because of his comments. This is completely unacceptable.
Sharon, thanks. You know, Dr. Jeff Goldhagen, when we talk about these issues and how public health has become politicized in Florida, you hear the most anguish, honestly, from healthcare workers and people who've had up close and personal knowledge of how deadly this disease can be. You can hear the frustration in that caller's voice.
You know, most of us have gone into medicine as a mission. And when you have that mission politicized and you see the results of that politicization, so to speak, as the previous speaker mentioned, the results being measured in terms of people dying and people suffering, it is the antithesis of what we have dedicated our lives to. Now, the previous caller used the word unacceptable. Another caller used the word ridiculous. I think this has risen to a level far beyond that. This is dangerous, and it's dangerous in many respects, not the least of which is that it gets at the core of our democratic ideals. And so this is democracy being dismantled.
Let me ask you, here's a tweet from a listener. The governor is going full authoritarian. Look at the bills moving through on teaching slavery, gay rights issues, the private militia, the voter fraud department. Don't forget not allowing the professors from UF to testify. And now this Department of Health director. What about that accusation that this is an authoritarian government in Florida?
Well, we can go back further than that. A few years ago, there was legislation passed that prevented pediatricians, primarily pediatricians, from talking to families about gun safety. And that was completely based on a political platform. And so we see this happening over and over again. And yes, I think these are the steps that you see happening in autocratic governments, and not the least of which is what we see happening now in Eastern Europe, what we see happening in Hong Kong, where you have academic freedoms being addressed. And you have decisions that are being eliminated and that are being made in the best interests of communities.
Let's take Evelyn just dropped off, but she wanted to talk about the social contract of vaccines. Mark in Lynn Haven has an alternative point here to make as well. Mark, thanks for listening and calling. You're on the radio.
Sure. Thanks for taking my call. A couple of decades as an emergency manager in Florida, worked very closely with a number of health department directors, and I went to all of the training at their level and, the command level for pandemic response and including public affairs, public health law, and they're in a terrible, terrible position because all of the training that they have had that they would bring to bear on an issue like this is completely counter to what their directive has been out of Tallahassee, or at least enough counter that has put them in a horrible spot. And they are in politically sensitive positions. At the end of the day, the governor is in charge of this emergency, but none of the training, and it contemplated this. It contemplated this particular pandemic. I mean, and this was their big Category 5 hurricane, and they're just in such a tough spot. I would just ask that people, take pity on their director, because they do have a chain of command, and this thing is being run like any other emergency. So,
yeah.
it's just a shame. I do have a quick question too for the doctor. Is any of this HIPAA protected? The vaccine, do I have it? Do I not at work? How does HIPAA treat that?
Yeah, HIPAA is the just to clarify for folks if they're not familiar with the acronym, Mark. Thanks for calling, by the way, Mark from Lynn Haven. HIPAA is the Federal Health Privacy Patient Privacy Law. Dr. Goldhagen, what about this the idea of the federal privacy law and vaccine status?
Well, it's really an interesting question. HIPAA actually relates specifically to healthcare institutions. And so there's a misperception out there that an employer cannot ask an employee about a medical issue. They can. That's the HIPAA relates to healthcare institutions. It doesn't relate to venues outside the healthcare system.
Dr. Goldhagen, thanks for all the medical and even they're wandering into a little bit of legal commentary as well. Dr. Jeff Goldhagen is the chief at UF Health Jacksonville. Thank you so much, sir.
Well, over the past 6 months, Florida's home prices have risen faster than any other state. That's according to a new Washington Post analysis of Zillow data. Yeah, home prices here are catching up to really expensive states like New York and Virginia. And first-time home buyers are being priced out of the market, often by corporate investors able to pay cash and above the asking price. Maybe that's happened to you. At the same time, while home prices skyrocket, Florida paychecks are growing at a slower rate than the national average. In the 6 months ending in November, Tom, when home prices went up 16% here, average hourly earnings in Florida went up only 2.1%.
Yeah, it's tough, certainly, looking to buy a home. And at the same time, right, if you're renting, those rents are skyrocketing, up almost 30%, causing some Florida cities to consider housing states of emergency. Now, this growing lack of housing affordability presents an emerging political challenge for Governor Ron DeSantis. He's frequently argued that his hands-off approach to the coronavirus pandemic here in Florida is attracting people to move to the Sunshine State, as many as 800 new residents per day. That puts a lot more strains on the demand for a place to call home. Now, since 1992, Florida has used a funding mechanism to try to pay for affordable housing, at least on paper. It's called the Sadowski Trust Fund. It's funded through real estate transfer taxes that the state collects. But Florida legislators have consistently, over the past many years, diverted money to other things, such as a decision last year to shift $200 million of this money to instead help fight sea level rise. This year, though, the governor has proposed spending all of the projected Sadowski Trust Fund's money, $355 million worth of it, on affordable housing. So let's talk about this here. Florida, have you had trouble affording rent or a mortgage? Are you in the market looking to buy or sell a home? What options are there to address the affordability of housing here in Florida? 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800 at Florida Roundup.
Joining us now with their thoughts, we welcome Jamie Ross, President and CEO of the Florida Housing Coalition. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Good to have you. And with us as well, State Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith, Democrat of District 49. Representative Smith, good to have you.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
If I could begin with you, Representative Smith, it's my understanding you and some other representatives in Tallahassee have urged the governor's office and your fellow lawmakers to call for an actual state of emergency when it comes to housing, or you've tried to raise the alarm about this. What prompted that move?
Well, the affordable housing crisis in Florida just keeps getting worse and worse. I represent a district based in East Orlando, and we know in Central Florida, our hospitality and tourism workers have really struggled with this issue, not just recently, but for many years and decades with very little relief from the state. Now, late last year, we started hearing from constituents who were facing some pretty outrageous rent hikes compared to what they were used to seeing. And we found that this was happening across the state of Florida, not just in Orlando. Mm-hmm. We were seeing rent hikes of up to, we're talking 10%, 20%, even 30% rent hikes, which Floridians just can't afford. That's why we've called on Governor DeSantis. We joined a number of other Democratic lawmakers officially urging him to declare a housing affordability state of emergency. And there's a very specific reason why. When a state of emergency is declared in the state of Florida, it opens up the opportunity for the Attorney General to use existing statutory protections for consumers from price gouging. We have done this, of course, we've seen this in the last year or so, where during a state of emergency, let's say when we're preparing for a hurricane, there's price gouging consumer protections for things like water, batteries, gasoline. Even during the pandemic, we had price gouging consumer protections for things like hand sanitizer and PPE. Well, putting a roof over your head is a basic human right, and folks yeah. are really being taken advantage of. So that's why we've urged the governor to take action here.
This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio, 305-995-1800. We'll go to your calls in a moment. First, though, Jamie Ross, Florida Housing Coalition. Sounds pretty serious out there, and certainly when we hear from people around the state, they talk about really tough situations. How dire is the situation for people who can no longer afford to rent an apartment in this state?
Well, it is exactly as you said. It is dire. It is a crisis. There's just so much in the way of statistics out there. Basically, about a third of our state is struggling to pay for their housing costs. And of course, that is in no small part due to the years of the sweeps of the trust funds, which we are so grateful have come to an end. And I will say very grateful also to Governor DeSantis, who actually from the very first time he came into office has put in his proposed budget to the legislature fully funding.
Yeah, fully fund that affordable housing yes. fund. But let me ask you, do you think he should go further and do what Rep. Smith is saying and declare a state of emergency?
Yeah, that is outside the scope of the work that the Florida Housing Coalition does. We do the training and technical assistance on affordable housing for the state of Florida. So we're really working to push good policies forward with best practices in both land use and financing for affordable housing. So and I specifically facilitate the Sadowski Coalition. So we're laser focused really on one bill, and that is the budget bill, and to make sure that what looks really good this year, which is the proposal that $355 million be used
will
the
go
state
toward
and trust fund.
Sure. In a moment after the break, we'll explain how that money will be used and how it can help people listening right now. Tell us your stories, Florida. Are you having trouble with rent or mortgage? 305-995-1800. Your call's next here on the Florida Roundup.
Support for the Florida Roundup comes from Naples, Marco Island, and the Everglades, home to white sand beaches, warm Gulf waters, elegant accommodations, fine dining, and more. For an unforgettable vacation, only paradise will do. Florida's Paradise Coast.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. We're talking about the housing crisis in Florida, leading some lawmakers to ask the governor to declare a housing state of emergency. Are you struggling to pay rent? Is a mortgage just out of reach for you? 305-995-1800. Marianne is on the line in Miami. Marianne, hi. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
Well, I guess I was just my feelings on the current issue is it's scary. I'm a single mom, and I have a job, thank gosh. But given, you know, the COVID situation, sometimes my kids have to miss school. They're sent home on quarantine. I miss work. I could be, like, I'm not obviously prepared to miss work and things like that. So I get worried if I can't pay my rent, and with the rising costs of prices and just everything is increasing, it's scary to think that I can end up homeless with my children.
Yeah. What's your rent, Marianne? What's your rent?
$1,450 for a two-bedroom.
Yeah.
And I was part of that program for the Equal Opportunity, I think, assistance program, and it's not as good as it looks. Those checks don't come as consistently as they do for whatever reason. There's, like, administrative issues. Sometimes they'll put me to the order of the wrong name, and then I'm just stuck trying to get that check remailed out correctly and little things like that that just...
And I'm so sorry to hear that. I really appreciate that call, Marianne. So, Representative Smith, people all over the state are in the same boat. At the same time, if people are trying to buy a home, often they can't get it because corporate investors swoop in and buy a home above the asking price, all cash. So people are getting squeezed on rent, and they're unable to climb a ladder of prosperity by buying a home. Can you explain a little more fully how a state of emergency could help more people in Florida who are caught in this housing crisis?
Right. Well, first, stories like we just heard from Marianne in Miami are stories that we're hearing from Floridians all across the state. Really, every person deserves the freedom that comes with knowing that with hard work at a good paying job, they will be able to afford a home for their family and put a roof over their head. Now, the state of emergency that we're urging Governor DeSantis to declare would basically allow for price gouging consumer protections to protect renters who have seen rent hikes above 10%. It will freeze some of those rents in place if they've been rent hiked above 10%, so that folks can be able to continue affording to live in their apartment. That is such a big, big, big part of what folks are dealing with right now, like we just heard from your caller, which is that they have a job. They are, you know, they have a place that they're renting, and the rent increases are just too high for them to absorb. We hear all the time about folks who have decent paying jobs who are quitting their jobs to leave because the city or area where they work, they can't afford the rents there anymore. So they're either having to leave town and move somewhere else where apartments are more affordable, or they're leaving their profession to find another line of work that can help them pay their rent.
Representative Smith, it's Tom Hudson. Why 10% is set for that demarcation of price gouging?
Well, really what we had to take a look at is what were some of the average year-to-year rent hikes that folks were already used to experiencing. Certainly no one wants to see their rent go up under any circumstance for any amount, but usually between 3 and 5% was the average rent hike that we used to see before this crisis that we're in now. Now what we're seeing in Central Florida is since January, an average of 20% rent hikes. In South Florida, an average of 14% across the board. And in Tampa Bay, 24.8% average rent hike since July, which is the largest increase in the nation. So what I'll also remind your listeners is that while affordable housing is an issue across the United States, it is particularly worse in Florida. It's a Florida-specific crisis that requires a Florida-specific solution. That's why we're urging the governor to take action.
Plenty of tweets on this. Amy sends us this. If rents skyrocket, who will do the jobs that we have found we cannot do without? April sends this note, 10% increase in rent in 2 years, 0% increase in wages in 15 years. Andrew has been listening in Orlando and joins us now. Andrew, go ahead. You're on the radio.
Hi. My situation is one of, we're caught up in the middle of this. We had a house fire on January the 1st. I had a comfortable mortgage that I could pay. And now we're my two nephews and myself are out looking for an apartment because our house is not livable, and we can't find anything that's even close to affordable. for myself. I'm a retiree on Social Security, and I have two younger nephews that live with me. And we're just in a predicament because of this skyrocketing increase.
Yeah.
It's literally unjustifiable and out of control.
Andrew, anybody hurt in that house fire?
No, we were fortunate to get out, but it
grateful
did,
to hear that.
Destroyed the livability of the house.
Yeah, sorry to hear that. Grateful that there were no injuries, but now the financial difficulty of finding the next place to live. Andrew in Orlando here joining us on the Florida Roundup, and you're listening to it on Florida Public Radio. Jamie Ross, the president and CEO of the Florida Housing Coalition, what kind of advice would you have, Andrew, in that specific incident where Comfortable Mortgage, the home was claimed by fire, and now he can't find a place to live?
Well, of course, I don't know what the insurance situation was there. We'd be happy to talk with him if he wants to call our office. But, you know, I don't know his particular situation. But I think the bigger picture, and which he's pointing out, is the housing crisis, again, that also Representative Smith is talking about. We are, you know, we are finding that more and more families are becoming homeless, what we call economic homelessness. I think a lot of folks still think of people who are experiencing homelessness as people who have drug problems or mental health issues. And that's not the reality. The reality is we have families falling into homelessness for this reason, because they can't find a place that they can afford even when they're working full time.
Even when they're working in a Jamie Ross, Melissa Ross here. Quick question for you, for everyone out there listening who's really struggling. The governor, let's be clear, he probably won't do what Rep. Smith wants. He probably won't call for a housing emergency, state of emergency in Florida. So can you give people advice in the closing minutes? What can they do? What resources are available? How will the trust fund help people once it's allocated, the hundreds of millions that will be allocated to help with
housing? $355 million, and it may actually be more. There's another revenue estimate coming out, so it may actually go up because it goes up as the revenue estimates go up. Florida has the best housing programs in the nation. They're national models. At the local level, it's the SHIP program, and that when those offices are funded, which they are now, that's the place to go to look for help to your local SHIP program in the community that you're in. SHIP can be used to help people from homelessness to first-time home ownership. SHIP can provide a security deposit first and last month's rent to get into an apartment. It is an incredibly flexible program. It's, again, a model. So you have your SHIP office in every one of our 67 counties and our entitlement cities. So, for instance, Orlando has a SHIP program and Orange County has a SHIP program. And at the state level, we have the SALE program, the State Apartment Incentive Loan Program. That is not direct because that's what developers use to build apartments, and it's incredibly important. All of these monies are leveraged 6-to-1. They create an enormous economic boon for the state of Florida, and they produce housing. But you know what thing we also have to think about, big picture, is preserving housing. You mentioned early on about investors. We got to get ready in Florida for something that's already started. And that is investors not only buying the market rate housing, but buying affordable housing portfolios, hoping to turn them into market rate and luxury housing when their use agreements, you know, that require them to be affordable, when those expire. So yeah. We have a crisis.
That's locking people out of home ownership. So there's people who can't make rent, and there's people who are trying to buy a home but can't because of that dynamic you just mentioned. We're going to have to leave it there, but I want to thank you, Jamie Ross, Florida Housing Coalition, State Representative Carlos Guillermo Smith, both on the line to talk about the housing crisis in Florida. Thanks to you both so much for your insights.
Thank you.
Thank you for the discussion.
Thank you both. Lots of tweets that we weren't able to get to. Thanks for sharing them, folks. The Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Natu Tway are producers. Catherine Hobbs is associate producer.
WLRN's director of radio operations and our technical director is Peter J. Maris. Engineering help each and every week from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Richard Ives answers our phones. Our theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. We'll be back next Friday at noon. Have a great weekend.
Support for the Florida Roundup comes from Naples, Marco Island, and the Everglades, home to white sand beaches, warm Gulf waters, elegant accommodations, fine dining, and more. For an unforgettable vacation, only paradise will do. Florida's paradise.